Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Clint's mama told me he used to strut around when he was a high school star wearing a banana hammock.
We have a liftoff.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley. It's the 5 o'clock fire.
Yes, yes, I did strut around in a thong.
When you're a big high school star for them Robert E. Lee Ganders, I mean, why not?
It had a double string on the back. It was called a jock strap. General, I ain't never put on no damn thong. You kidding me?
That's not what I heard.
Ryan Hughley is out. My boy Luke Morrow is in. Big shout out to Brandon Scott for coming in and spending a segment with us there. T-Mill is on the ones and twos behind the glass there. And we've talked about it several times today, but these Rockets now, they turned me on a bit. A little preseason NBA basketball. Rockets 130, Pelicans 128. They went up there and put it on a skinny Zion Williamson. The big lineup was what they went with last night. Double bigs. Actually had 3 7-footers on the floor is what they went with last night. Amen Thompson, KD, Jabari Smith Jr., Sengun, and Adams was the guys that got all the run last night. I guess I did not realize over the offseason, Luke, how committed to the double big lineup the Rockets were going to actually be. You said something a little earlier in the show that kind of took me by surprise, and that you expect a significantly more of that amount of that this year.
I do. I think they just leaned into it this offseason of not only bringing back Steven Adams, but you get Clint Capella. You know, I mean, you only have so much money to spend, obviously, and they spent it on two of those guys, and they brought in no like true guards. So now you're in this scenario where Fred VanVleet goes down with an injury, and it's really just Reed Shepard's the only other option, as we've already talked about this afternoon. I don't think they seem to love Reed Shepard. So now the alternative at the point guard position is, well, let's just play Amen Thompson, who's 6'7". So the projected starting lineup, like the starting lineup they used last night, and say what you want about preseason, but that was a dress rehearsal last night. All five guys were 6'7" and taller. Amen Thompson's 6'7". Everyone else is 6'11" and taller in the starting lineup. So yeah, I think just based off of the actions and the decisions this offseason, they've completely gone, they've leaned so far into this big guy lineup, as opposed to you already had Steven. I don't know if you needed Clint Capella as well this offseason. You could have used that money or those resources to get another guard, and this was before the Fred VanVleet injury, to get another guard, because I thought they were already short on the guard position, and now you're even shorter. So no pun intended. I mean, shorter in terms of numbers, not height. So, yeah, I think they've just, all their actions have been geared towards height.
Well, is there an argument to, not to get off in the weeds, but is there an argument to say that Fred VanVleet, along with Reed Shepard, and in my, it slipped my mind, what's the other kid, the other catch name at guard, that plays guard?
Holiday.
Holiday, Aaron, there you Holiday, go. Yeah. I mean, isn't it fair to say that those guys, you got one that is reserved that could help you sparingly as need be. You got a veteran that you'd like to probably limit his reps, and you got a guy in Reed Shepard you need to develop. And you look at if you are gonna lean into the big lineup, the double big lineup, you need somebody to take some of the minutes away from Adams at the very least, and maybe even Sengun down the stretch. And if you want to give yourself a quality player to do it, Capella would be the route. So that injury just really put him in a bad spot. I mean, if that doesn't happen, even at guard, you're probably in a pretty good position to kind of massage the season. But that injury hurt him big time.
Yeah, you're in a much better position, obviously, and I think to get through the regular season. But my big thing, my concern, I was, it's again, hindsight's 20/20. But even before that injury, I was pounding on the table to get another guard in here, a veteran guard, because I think come postseason, you need multiple ball handlers, and I think we saw that last postseason. We saw that even in the NBA Finals, where you had two teams, the Pacers and the Thunder, who had a bunch of guards, and yet, you know, they struggled to bring the ball up the floor and to handle the pressure, and they had a bunch of turnovers in that Finals series. So I thought even just relying solely on Fred VanVleet was not enough. Now he's down, and when it comes to the playoffs, look, Amen Thompson might be great as the quote-unquote point guard in this offense, but playoff basketball is just a whole nother animal. So my concern really more so is for the playoffs. I think you need depth. I think you need more than one good option. to be able to bring the ball up the floor, because when that guy does come off the floor, you need somebody else where you don't skip a beat in the postseason. And so we'll see how it plays out. But, yeah, I wish they had more help at the guard position on this team.
Well, we'll see. I know one thing is to bank on Amen Thompson's development. Look, he had a solid evening last night, 21 points, 5 rebounds in 24 minutes of work, and 100%, 9 for 9 from the free throw line, 2 of 3 from beyond the arc last night, 2 struggle points last year for him apparently, and looked really confident last night and in both situations and had a good night there. So Amen Thompson had him a good night, and then Jabari Smith Jr. had a good night as well. 22 minutes, 26 points, 4 of 10 from 3. Look, the 4 of 10, it was actually significantly better when I turned the TV on. I mean, he had a rough stretch there late, but still a guy that can fill it up from outside. And I'm going to tell you, man, I'm a big, big, big Jabari Smith Jr. Fan. But there you have it. The Rockets, they had a little preseason action last night. One more game, one more preseason game left before it starts to count. Y'all, Thursday night at Atlanta versus the Hawks, 6:30 p.m. ESPN2. And again, this is another game, as Luke just said, last night was a dress rehearsal. It's going to be treated a little bit more like a regular season game where that starting lineup is going to play into the second half. So if you've ever felt the urge to watch a little preseason NBA, the Rockets with KD, at least they're going to approach that game as they would a regular season game from jump. So check it out again, 6:30 Thursday night versus Atlanta. I think it's going to be on ESPN2.
Let's go, Rocket.
5 o'clock fire.
All right, Alex Bregman with the Boston Red Sox. He is reportedly opting out of his contract with the Boston Red Sox.
Is Breggy being ridiculous?
Any room, any interest in an Alex Bregman reunion?
Stop it before it starts.
What happened, T? No.
I mean, not that I don't still love Alex Bregman. And
I mean, we're in the third baseman. The haven't Astros. You heard?
Yes, I have. And that is the first bullet point / reach of a connection. I do not want to hear from any of my fellow Astros fans. Just stop it before you even start.
I would love it, but it's not. I mean, how could you possibly make it work? Like, they already have too many people on the infield to try to figure out where to put them. Now you're going to throw Bregman in there. I guess you could trade somebody away to get him. But the reason why he's opting out is because obviously he believes he could get even more money now than the Red Sox were giving him. And that was already too rich for the Astros. So if the Astros didn't want to spend the money a year ago, I don't think they want to spend how much it probably take to get Bregman now. So, yes, I think I would give it probably less than 1% chance of happening. But just in a vacuum, if you ask me, would I be interested or would I love to see Bregman return to the Astros? Absolutely. Of course. I just don't see how you could make it work.
I agree. I am a big Bregman fan, and I hope Bregman finds a landing spot and makes all the money he can possibly make. He just ain't going to be here with the Astros. I am dead set on Carlos Correa at third, Jeremy Pena at short. I'm telling you, that left side of our infield really does it for me, boys, to be completely honest with you. And I don't want anybody messing with it. So I am all set. But keep your eyes open. We'll see where Alex Bregman lands. Now, one thing Bregman did do this year, I did not check the final numbers, Luke, but I mean, he did get off to a fast start.
Yeah.
I mean, anybody out there that because it was a real thing here in Houston, boy, slow start Bregman was something that we had just learned to – I mean, I was drugged simply because I acknowledged it. People were like, oh, it's Bregman, it's slow start. Like, damn, okay, we just come to expect it out of him. He damn
fastest
sure –
fastest start of his career this season.
Well, there you go, man. He was lights out early on, and so, you know, it looks like maybe he checked that box finally, so maybe he will make a longer term, bigger money. Just won't be here in Houston. Good luck to Alex Bregman.
Yeah, statistically his best season since 2019, by the way.
There
so trying to cash in now.
There's you a good reason to opt out of that
sunbook.
5 o'clock fire.
All right, the Rawlings Gold Glove Award finalists have been announced. It is there are two Astros on the list. Mauricio Dubon is at that utility, super utility. And Cam Smith in right field. They have both been named finalists for the 2025 Rawlings Gold Glove Award at their respective positions, obviously. This will be the second Gold Glove if Dubon can win it here. But, and I'll be honest with you, I don't know how the hell he doesn't, to be clear. This is the second year in a row where he has started games at seven different positions. First Astros player in history to start at seven different positions in consecutive years. How about this? 37 starts at second base, 24 at shortstop, 15 at third base, 15 in left field, 10 in center field, 2 in right field, and 1 at first base. All over the place. That's yeah. Is that common? I mean, obviously it is for him. Two of the last 3 years he's done it. So, the last 2 years he's done it. That seems aggressive.
Yeah, well, you had read it earlier. What, first Astros player to ever do it in back-to-back years, I guess it was?
Yeah, first to ever do it in consecutive seasons.
There's a few guys that can do that, that can play all the positions except for catch, but that's not your typical utility guy. And, not everyone does that. There's only a few guys per year that can pull that off. So he's a weapon in that sense. I think where he gets a little it's just when they ask him to do a little too much. When he has to fill in and be your everyday second baseman or for a period of time, I think that's where he gets stretched a little too thin. But he's a perfect Swiss Army knife coming off the bench, can play every position, can get a good hit, a big hit every once in a while as well. So, yeah, props to him. But he's a good fielder, and he can play all over the diamond.
You're talking like you don't want Dubon on the field every day.
No, I don't.
Damn it, Lou.
No.
See, we were in good graces earlier with one of your takes, and now you done went against it. I'll be damn. Okay. Look, if he's going to play seven different positions, who am I to argue that he should start somewhere? He's a super utility mm-hmm. and can literally help you rest guys throughout a season. Good gosh. That's one of them that I did not realize. I guess he probably should have put my mind to it just briefly, and I would have figured it out. But seven different positions, that's impressive. Also, beyond Mauricio Dubon is Cam Smith, which this one kind of takes me aback. I'll be honest with you. Cam Smith being a Gold Glove Award finalist. After being a guy that had never played right field or was learning how to play right field and then couldn't play down the stretch because he was a right-handed hitter and he throw a left-handed hitter out there, which, by the way, that swings out of his shoes. And Citron was just couldn't get this lineup to be more disciplined. Isn't it funny how that part of it was brought? We want to have better at bats, see more pitches, and then one of your deadline trades was a guy that swings out of his shoes harder than Altuve does. He is less disciplined than Altuve. So, but anyway, Cam Smith is congratulations to him, man. He's up for that Gold Glove in right field. Several of your ranked up there, and several of your advanced stats, if you will. That earned him the honor. Big year for Cam Smith, Luke, whether he wins it or not. To go out to right field, to swing the bat as well as he did all year long, and to play as good a right field as he did, all joking aside, I think from an Astros perspective, that's all we could ask for from the guy, right? To me, he exceeded expectations. Hmm. I thought initially was like, we were having a conversation of no matter how good his spring training is, should he be on the opening day roster? And then all of a sudden he's never played right field, and then all of a sudden he's hitting 270 and he's playing apparently a Gold Glove caliber right field. I don't know what else we could ask for.
Yeah.
Seems like you probably could ask for a little bit more.
No, I'm probably being unreasonable because, look, obviously it was the longest season of his career by far. He's not used to playing 162 games. He didn't have very much minor league experience. He got thrown right in there. He's your opening day starter. He's so young in his career and experience. So probably should have been expected that he would fade like that as the season went on. But he was a net negative, at least offensively, in the second half of the year. He wasn't a big league hitter. And again, I guess that should be the expectation. But for me, if you think he's good enough to start the year in your opening day lineup, your everyday right fielder, then he's got to be able to make it beyond the middle of July with competitive and worthwhile at-bats. So that's where I thought it kind of petered out as the year went on. And we've seen rookies come up and right away have success.
All kidding aside, if I ask this, that phrase always makes me laugh.
But Luke says it was such a straight face.
Yeah, no, they petered out, man.
The usage is tremendous. It's believable.
Yeah,
it just goes to show you when you're authentic, you can get away with some stuff. If Tyler had cracked that hot mic in there and she elbowed petered out, half our listeners would run off their car off in the damn ditch.
Yeah, I guess that's right.
You don't even remember where you were going with it, do you?
No, I don't know.
My bad, Luke.
No, you're good. Anyways, the defense to me is just the cherry on top. Where I saw a lot of people, even throughout the regular season, taking a victory lap. Like, what a great trade or what a star player just because of his defense. And to me, as I said earlier, it's kind of irrelevant. Altuve can't play defense. Jordan can't play defense. You want them in the lineup and on your team every day of the week. The top free agents this offseason don't play defense. So it's more about what you do with the bat. And I thought Cam Smith, as a hitter, didn't bring a whole lot to the table this year. Great defender, but I need more than that. So congrats to him. He is a good right fielder, but it's kind of irrelevant.
You see how he worked that back in? He's back in good graces. That defense don't matter, man. You are right. That's right up my damn alley right there, brother. You're back in good graces, baby, for what it's worth. Mauricio Dubon, Cam Smith, congrats, man. It's big to even get to be a finalist, much less win the award. So congrats. Well-deserved. Hope them boys hope they get it. When is that?
November 2nd?
November 2nd. I was trying to make it a Christmas Day deal. November the 2nd is when they're going to announce. Sunday, November the 2nd, I believe that is, when they're going to announce the winners.
5 o'clock fire.
Big shout out to Texans defensive back Derek Stingley Jr. He popped a question, boys. Derek Stingley Jr. is off the market, and he's getting married. I don't have his fiance's last name. Annabella. I got Annabella. I don't have the last name right there, but the good thing is it's soon to be Annabella Stingley. They've been together for a long, long time. They shared the news of their engagement in an Instagram post Tuesday evening, which I did see it. I think they got engaged last Friday, and congrats to them, man. Now, get married and get to having them babies, man. Have you a big family? You can afford all the nannies that you need, and
he doesn't just lock down receivers.
That's right. We need more little Stingleys running around here, man. The youth football will be significantly better. That is for damn sure. Get you or you can be like me and just have a bunch of little girls and youth softball or horseback riding or something.
Yeah. There you go.
Can be better. But, hey, but congratulations, man. That's a big move. Big move by Derek Stingley, changing the game, baby.
How did the engagement ring compare to Deshaun Watson's $2.5 million engagement ring?
I do not know how it compares to Deshaun Watson's, but I'm going to tell you, that joker was big.
Yeah?
Yeah. Sure. Oh, you know, them engagement pictures, they get up nice and close on them. Stingley spent some money now.
I'm sure.
He's not a perv, though.
Who?
Stingley.
Oh boy! No. We don't even need to keep this thing going. All right, how big is this Monday night Texans game for you? Is this the last chance for you as a Texans fan to buy in to this Texans team? That's next right here on Sports Radio 610.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Ryan Ugly is out. Luke Morrow is in. Appreciate everybody out there for joining us. Hope everybody had a great day. Glad you're off. Easy into the house. We've had us a good little show here. I do want to remind everybody out there that we are live. Thirsty Thursday. Big shout out to Bud Light for making it happen. Thirsty Thursday this week. We will be at the New Caney location. Buffalo Wild Wings, the New Caney location, Buffalo Wild Wings up off 59 for Thirsty Thursday. Big shout out to Bud Light. We'll have some giveaways there. The Bud Light girls will be there. We'll have us a good time. There's always specials going on Thirsty Thursday at Buffalo Wild Wings. Also, Football Friday this week, we are Kingwood location of BB's. BB's location in Kingwood for Football Friday. Academy Sports and Outdoors and our Houston area Ford dealers are who makes that happen. We will be giving away tickets, Houston Texans tickets, on Football Friday. You got to be on location. Again, that's BB's in Kingwood. We'll be giving away tickets. You got to be there to win the tickets. So, Thirsty Thursday, Buffalo Wild Wings, New Caney, Football Friday, BB's, Kingwood, come on through. All right, Texans got a big matchup Monday night with the Seattle Seahawks. We got plenty of time to cuss and discuss this one. We will obviously have a full show all the way up through Monday and have a little pregame action Monday, our last hour of our show. by the way, from 5 to 6, so stay plugged in there. But for right now, I think this is a good 30,000-foot view question. Is Monday night, Texans-Seahawks, is this the last chance for you, you as a Texans fan, to buy into this iteration, this version of the Houston Texans? It's a tough question, but it's a real question, unfortunately. Texans sit 2-3 right now. The two wins have come versus two of the bottom-of-the-barrel football teams in the NFL. I know it's hard to think about Baltimore, but no Lamar Jackson, missing a bunch of Pro Bowlers, are clearly the bottom of the barrel when that's the case, and that's what we caught. And then obviously the Tennessee Titans, who have fired their coach. Is this the last chance, Luke, for you to buy into this year's version of the Houston Texans?
It is, and I say this because if they were to lose, they'd be 2-4, and you could say there's still so much season left, and you would be right. And you could say they might still win 10 games this year, and yes, they could, but my point being on the buy-in, I'm not telling you that the season's over or that the Texans could not still go on a run and win 10 games and potentially make the playoffs this season, but I just couldn't buy into it in the here and now. It'd have to be a real surprise. I couldn't say next week, oh yeah, they'll just win the next three at home, or oh yeah, they'll still find a way to go, what would that be, 8-3 the rest of the season. Because if they were to lose on Monday, as you laid out, the two victories would be against two of the three worst teams in the conference, and then they would be 0-4 against the actual good teams they played. Even if you were just 1-3, if you beat one of those teams, like for example, if they do win Monday against the Seahawks, then I am all in on this team and seeing like, oh, actually now they have won three in a row. Maybe they did turn a corner. They just beat Seattle on the road. Now they're home for the next three. So I think it's a huge swing game in the sense of if they find a way to win in Seattle, it's a big time win on Monday Night Football, and then you could really get excited about this team and the improvements of their last three games heading into a three-game homestand. But if they lose, it's kind of hard to sell yourself on the idea of believing in some sort of turnaround or believing they can hang with the top teams in football and really accomplish something special this year, because eventually you have to beat a good team. And if you start 0-4 against the four best teams on your schedule to this point, it's hard to take a team seriously. And I think you made a great point the other day, Clint. I heard you compare it to the Chiefs, where they were 2-3 taking on a good Lions team. And they went out there and they took care of business and they played really well and they won by double digits. And now they're 500 and you're thinking about the Chiefs as one of the better teams in the AFC. And I think it could be similar, where if the Texans go out there and handle their business, you feel good about the offense and they beat a good Seahawks team, they'll be 3-3. And with a win against Seattle and a three-game winning streak and the next three at home, you could throw the Texans into the conversation.
Absolutely.
Of, hey, you know what? They're right in this. They're as good as anyone else in the AFC. So, yeah, I think it's a huge swing game. And for me, it's the last chance that you lose this game. It's going to be hard for me to believe you can beat some good teams and accomplish something serious.
Well, look, I think for me, Luke, you got to define buy-in, right? I mean, for me, when I talk about buying into the Texans, I'm not talking about getting to eight wins. I'm talking about winning the division, getting a home playoff, winning 10 games, getting to the second round playoffs or beyond. Like, that's what I'm talking about buying into. And the answer is absolutely yes, right? The expectations at for this football team, where the Texans are right now, again, are 10-plus wins, second round plus in the playoffs for the Texans. That's just the reality. Unless you lower those expectations to buy in, that's a different story. But that's what we're talking about buying into. I was listening to Andre Ware the other day on Texans All Access, and Andre Ware just matter-of-factly said, look, the path for the Texans to win a Super Bowl, and this was just general talk, not necessarily about this year, but the path to win a Super Bowl is to get home field advantage throughout the playoffs, right? That's what you need to do if you're the Houston Texans. I mean, that again, that's the level of expectations that we're talking about. And so you drop to 2-4, as you said, 0-4 versus the best teams that you've played to date, and 2-0 versus two cellar dwellers, then there's not much promise for the season. And I'll tell you, I believe if you lose this game and you fall to 2-4, this season's over. I firmly believe that. I firmly believe it. I mean, it is 2-4 in this division with a better Jacksonville team and what looks to be a real Indianapolis team. Yeah, I think it's over. I think you start sliding, and I think you're in that Bengals range. I can't think of who's right below the Bengals, but you're in that range of teams that really just don't have much of a chance to contend.
I can add to that the data and tell you that only 9% of 2-4 teams have made the playoffs the last 35 years. So yeah, it's an uphill battle.
I hate to be having that conversation this early in the season, but that's the reality of it. This is a, you call it a swing game. I mean, that is right. This is a monster game this weekend. A lot at stake. And if this version of the Texans, the 2025 version of the Texans, is going to make any noise, and if we're just talking about building on what the two previous years, which were D'Amico's first 2 years, which were obviously really good years, if you're just building on that and hoping the product is equal to or better, forget the record, the product has a long way to go too. So we shall see. One of our favorite here. Let's go to the phone lines. Larry in Stafford. Larry, what's going on, baby?
What's going on, Clint? I'm gonna get to your Texans point here in a minute, man. Right. Let me talk about Reed Stafford real quick. Me and you just had a little conversation. He ain't physical enough to play that spot, man, and he's just not able to be on the floor with those kind of elite athletes like Jabari and KD and Alfred and all of the big boys, Amin and all. He's not ready for that kind of action, man. And unfortunately, I've said this before, and before everybody go and wreck their cars and all this other stuff, when I compare him to Matt Maloney when we had that squad that he was leading, you got to be able to have another dog at that point guard position, man. And I think we can use Reed's skill set for spot-up shooting and being able to catch some threes and everything. But for him to be out there leading KD and them, nah, man, you got to have somebody that got some go. Now, Clint, you just said something, and you know I'm a big fan of the Baytown Badass. But you can't be on these airways talking about if they lose to an NFC team in Seattle that the damn season is over. We know that if you use your bye week to do what I did, you evaluated the Texans' next four games, and you realize defensively the Texans have the best defense out of all the defenses they're going to play. Now, I know we need to focus on the offense, right? And I went through Seattle's offense. There's not a position on Seattle's offense that I can find that is better than the Texans, except for maybe one of their offensive linemen. We're better at running back. We're better at quarterback. And I know Kenneth Walker, they getting ready to bench him. And if anybody try to tell me Jackson Smith and Nigba or Nigwa or whatever his name is better than Nico Collins, I'm going to call you a lie. Look, we have to go into Seattle and play the games like we know they're capable of playing. We've seen these boys go out there and play offense in the last two games before the bye week. That looks like the kind of offense that they should have been running from the start of the season. To get to the playoffs, the Texans are only one game behind Jacksonville, who lost the game last week, and we are two games behind Indy. And if you go back and look at Indy's schedule, they have played the Barstool bottom floors of the whole league. So I'm not concerned about Indy because we get their ass two times, and I'm pretty sure that C.J. Stroud is better than Daniel Jones. I know you and Luke are up there trying to figure out how we can get this win in Seattle, and I already feel like if we go up there and give us 17 to 20 points and our defense is on the field, they're going to chase that quarterback in Seattle ass around the field because these boys are playing football now, and they've had enough time. Injuries shouldn't be a problem or any of that kind of stuff, Clint. But the road to the AFC South still goes through Houston because we play all our teams in our division another time, and all you got to do is get in. Quit talking that foolishness about the season over, man. We got 12 more games in our hall.
All right, Larry's always, always good, man. It's always good. Look, I'm going to tell you, it ain't about losing just to the Seahawks. It's about falling to 2-4 and the fact that your ass ain't beating nobody but the Titans right. And the Baltimore Ravens. And if we're honest, I mean – the product's going to be – look, here's the deal. I'm a product guy anyway. I could probably get to a spot where I could remain somewhat confident if the product in Seattle is good. But I think – look, to Larry's point, I think if the Texans are able offensively to carry over what they did late in the Tennessee game and in the Baltimore game on the road in Seattle on primetime, then they win the game. I mean, I think with our defense I firmly believe if they're able to go up there, and I don't necessarily care to put a point total on it, but if they go up there and they're able to protect the quarterback, C.J. Stroud doesn't get sacked more than a couple times. He's not getting a hell beat out of him. He's not running all over the place. Dalton Schultz is getting 4 or 5 catches in the first half. Nico's getting his. There's 8 different receivers catching the foot. If we do all those things, then Larry, you are exactly right. I like your chances against Jacksonville. I like your chances against Indianapolis. I like your chances against some of the teams on this schedule. But the truth of the matter is, if you lose this game in Seattle, odds are it's because you backtrack and you backslid into some of those inexcusable things offensively. That's where I'm going with it. Now, could there be a product where we lose this game and I'm still confident? Sure. Yeah, I mean, there could be that. I just don't think that's how this thing's going to play out. So we shall see. But Larry, always a solid call. Greatly appreciate. Makes a really good point about Reed Shepard. Having been kind of an athlete that wasn't as talented as everybody else, but still had to be a leader and had to kind of be an alpha. I don't know exactly how to deliver the message yet, but I like Larry gave me something there on Reed Shepard. I think he's spot on. But while we're on the Rocket topic, let's stay there, man. We got to hit that one more time before we get out of here. There's one guy on this team that I don't think gets the respect and love that he flat out deserves, and it didn't take me but watching a chunk of a preseason game to get back to this point. I'll tell you who that is, and we'll discuss next right here on Sports Radio 610.
Let me get you out of the way, Tyler.
That boy, T-Mill. Woo!
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Ron Hughley is out. Boy, that song does it for me. That does it for me. Big Earn introduced me to that back in the day now.
Little CCR.
Come on now. Ron Hughley is out. Luke Morrow is in. Big shout out to Larry and Stafford for making another call in, and we greatly appreciate always good content. T-Mills on the ones and twos back there behind the glass. And don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. We do have T-Mills best bets coming up right around the corner. And we got Blue Jays and Mariners tonight. Little ALCS action rolling. And you better believe it, Tyler's done his due diligence and got a little something he's going to put out there for you. I want to get a little bit more juice out of the squeeze of these Rockets, man. It was preseason action, but it was, I'll steal it from you, Luke, it was a dress rehearsal. The M.A. Udoka is on record of saying that game plus the game Thursday night versus the Hawks is going to be a little bit more like a regular season game. The starters are going to play more minutes, and which tells me that they're probably going to play a little harder, which they did last night. Hell, Amen Thompson got into a little scuffle, if you will, with one of the Pelicans players. And I'm going to tell y'all, man, I mean, this is a likable bunch. I don't know about you two. I mean, I don't know how y'all vibe and get, but I mean, just the overall thought of like, who do you want representing the city of Houston more so? Obviously, we'd like a champion. But you got a team that is super physical, almost to a fault. You got a team that's going to hustle their ass off. You got a team that, for all intents and purposes, plays together all the time, is extremely tight. Just the whole makeup of what the Rockets are. I mean, what's not to like about them right now? I'm dialed in, man. The Rockets, they won last night, 130 to 128 over the Pelicans. It was a double big night. They had, again, Luke Morrow said earlier, the big lineup. It's not just the double big. I mean, hell, you got four of them that are damn near 7 foot or bigger in there. Amen Thompson at 6'7" is the smallest one on the floor. Amen Thompson, KD, Jabari Smith Jr., Alperen Şengün, and then Big Adams were on the floor. Got a ton of minutes, and it looked good. Look, Amen Thompson had a good night. Jabari Smith Jr. had a good night. 22 minutes, 26 points, and that's where I want to go. That's where I want to go with this real quick, Luke. I mean, I know there's several different, I think, conversations to be had about the Rockets. Larry just hit on the Reed Shepard dynamic of whether he can or will ever be the point guard, even if when Fred VanVleet's out, it seems like taking that bull by the horns is not coming natural to him. But it's the Jabari Smith factor for me. Luke, I feel like, am I crazy to feel like Jabari Smith Jr. kind of flies under the radar? I mean, I remember last year, I would watch the Rockets and I'd go, how's this guy not starting? Even with the guys that they had at the time, I was like, how's this guy not starting? And I know the answer to that question. Obviously, there's more to the game than just a guy that can play a little bit. I mean, you know, you look at Dylan Brooks and some of the guys that were playing in front of him were veterans that were bringing something other than just production to the floor and or to the table. And I understand why, but for me, Jabari Smith is a guy that's always hard to wrap my head around him not being on the floor, especially in critical minutes. I'm watching him last night, and whether it's he's shooting it well or just the way he moves, just the fact how big he is, I don't know what it is, but I feel like we talk about, you know, last year it was talking about all these different players of how many minutes should this guy have versus that guy, and it never seemed like we got to Jabari Smith. And this year it's Reed Shepard, his development, or Amen Thompson and his development, or, hey, man, Shingun's having a great offseason and in the Euro League, played, did some big things and earned a lot of respect there. And then I flipped that damn preseason game on last night, Luke, and I'm there again. I'm watching. I'm like, how does Jabari Smith always fly under the radar? And maybe that's just a me thing. Maybe that's a casual fan me thing, but it seems like that guy should be getting a lot more run than he does.
I think he will fly under the radar, at least to begin this year. It depends, you know, how much he does out there. But when you look at this team, obviously now with Kevin Durant, that's the big star who takes the oxygen out of the room. And then, as we discussed earlier, I mean, I think he will be in the MVP conversation this year. And then Amen is just exciting to watch and a fun player, and he's an up-and-comer. So you talk about all these other guys, and then I think to a certain extent that can make Jabari a little more underrated. You kind of forget about him. And I think he will be a lot better this year. He's done a better job so far, granted only preseason, but of developing his own shot or finding his own shot. He's been much more efficient so far, again, only preseason. But I think just having Durant is such a big help in twofold. One has just been simply being able to work with Durant all offseason and everything and throughout the season. But as I mentioned earlier, I think having Durant on the floor makes it easier for the rest of these guys, not only because of the attention he demands, but because of that confidence that it brings to a team or an offense that when you need a basket or when the shot clock's winding down, like, you have that guy. And I think it allows the rest of them to relax a little bit, not press as much. They can find their own shot a little bit more as well at times. And so I think all those factors will play into Jabari taking a step forward this year. And because of all of the other quote-unquote stars on this roster, I could see him continuing to be overlooked because of the rest of the players getting more attention. But I think he'll have a good year.
Not here on the drive, baby. I'm a big Jabari Smith guy, big Bari guy right here. So it's not going to happen on the drive. We're going to let it be known every damn day. At least I am anyway. I want to remind everybody real quick, we are at Buffalo Wild Wings in New Caney tomorrow, Thirsty Thursday. Come on through. Big shout out to Bud Light. And come win tickets Football Friday, BB's in Kingwood. Come win some Texans tickets up there. Also, we got to get to T-Mills Best Bets. What you got, baby?
I got four more for you.
Hey.
We got a rebound. Our heater came to its close last night, but that's okay. Hell, we hit 15 of freaking 16. It was bound to happen.
I don't like to talk about that, man.
Me either.
Notice I didn't mention it, man. You got best bets today, man.
You're right, and I appreciate that, actually. Let's get back to winning. I got four more last night. Did not go so well in that NLCS matchup, but I got four in this ALCS matchup tonight between Canada and the Seattle Mermen. First up, I got the Blue Jays plus one run at the Mariners this evening. They are playing this one in Seattle. Next, if the Blue Jays are going to be even close to that plus one bet hitting, they're going to need to score some runs. I'm on the Blue Jays over 3.5 runs against the Mariners tonight. And then two Toronto Blue Jays player props for you to finish things out, one of which is a familiar face, old George Springer. Hair doesn't look like the guy we used to know, but we love George still. Springer's going to get it done tonight. I'm on over 1.5 total bases for George Springer. And then the starting pitcher for the Toronto Blue Jays, I'm on over 14.5 pitching outs tonight for Shane Bieber. That was the lone bet we hit last night, that over 14.5 outs for that arm. Let's hit it tonight with Bieber over 14.5 outs. Those are your four best bets for the ALCS. Do y'all love or hate any of those?
Well, we're out of time. We don't have time to talk about love and hating, baby. They're T-Mill's best bets at T-Mill Real Deal. If you missed them on Twitter, you can check them out. Luke Morrow, appreciate you big time. By the way, Texans All Access is next, 6 to 8 p.m. with Vandermeer and John Harris. Tonight, Nick Caserio is going to join them live right off the jump just in a few minutes, y'all, at 6 p.m. Y'all come hang out with us tomorrow. Bud Light, Buffalo Wild Wings, New Caney, come through. Hang out. Area 45 is live. for your late night fix right here, 8 p.m. to midnight. Bijani, Creighton, and Osantiago. Until tomorrow, Houston, we love you, baby.
And the world's all right with me. Just one look at you.
Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Damn, that right there. I had to pause. I was like, wait a minute. Should I talk over this beauty or what? I mean,
oh, good. And me and Luke bonded over this.
That's
because
right.
This song, for someone else out there in the world other than myself that identifies this song and pairs it with the Power Rangers movie that came out whenever we were kids.
That's right.
Legendary.
So Red Hot Chili Peppers are making some royalty money off the Power Rangers? This is the theme
it's
music.
It's morphin' time.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
It's morphin' time.
Ay, 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 ay. Tyler, I love you too, man. You're so H-Town.